Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Dana O'Neill from The Athletic. Dana, how's it going? Thanks for taking time to join us this morning.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's going. It's been a little busy.
I'd say it has been. No question about it. So, Dana, with that in mind, what have been your thoughts on the NCAA tournament to this point? A wild path to get here with upsets and St. Peter's and all the great stories that go with it. And now that the Final Four is set, what have overall been your thoughts of the tournament thus far?
Yeah, you know, I think it's been honestly kind of emblematic of the whole season. There hasn't been – you know, I know Gonzaga was number one for the beginning and the end, if you will, but there hasn't been that dominant, obvious team that was going to run away with the thing all year, so we've seen a little bit of chaos. And I think it's actually worked out perfectly because my feeling has always been with the NCAA tournament that people love their early upsets and their Cinderellas, but when they get to the Final Four, they want something they can sink their teeth in. And here we go. We got Villanova, Duke, North Carolina, and Kansas. I mean, those are four arguably of the best programs in the country right now for the last few years. So I think it just shapes up as a monster. It's going to be bananas down there.
No, Dana, I was all in on the Peacocks all the way. I wanted the Peacocks.
Well, I was too. Who wasn't? I mean, come on, I agree. But, you know, but they finally played like a 15 seed, let's be honest.
Yeah, they did. Well, how would you put that team, because it is the only 15 to get that far, but that run versus other great Cinderella runs, would you put it at the top?
I mean, I certainly would, just because of the caliber of teams that they beat to get there. I mean, they beat Kentucky, number one, who was a team that was good enough to win a national championship. They beat Murray State, who was a team that a lot of people thought would be the Cinderella, not losing to the Cinderella. And then they go out and beat a Purdue team that many people thought all year this was the best chance that Matt Painter had to take a team to the Final Four and win it all. I mean, look, you know, if you lined up St. Peter's team across from Purdue's team with Travion Williams and Zach Edey, you'd be like, no, like that's just not happening. And yet it happened. So I think it was a phenomenal story, but it wasn't like an accident. I mean, Shaheen Holloway, you know, I was joking through this thing was going. I hope Seton Hall opened the bank account because he was getting more and more expensive every time the Peacock stepped on the floor.
Dana, obviously, I mean, there's so much talk right now about UNC and Duke coming up in the Final Four and Coach K's last tournament, all those things. What have you made of the way that Duke has played to this point in this tournament? How surprised are you that they put it together as well as they have into this tournament?
Well, as a person who was sitting courtside at the Carolina Duke retirement party for Mike Krzyzewski, I'm shocked. I mean, that team looked, not just because the way they lost, when they came out afterward to kind of sit for the retirement party, I wrote that they looked like they were like a little kid's put in time out. I mean, they just looked defeated and embarrassed. And I never thought, honestly, that they would summon the kind of energy and the ability to do this. And they always had it, but to see them actually put it together when it mattered most. I think it's interesting, you know, Krzyzewski has said repeatedly, and the players have too, that after that it's almost like they exhaled. I think that was just a ridiculous amount of pressure, and I'm sure given the opportunity to do it again, they wouldn't do it that way. And once they got through that, I mean, I think they started to figure out we're not bad. And I think the most important thing is Paolo Banchero has discovered that, oh, yes, that's right. I'm the best player on the court 98% of the time. It's time I start playing like it. So, I mean, yeah, I'm shocked because they are rolling downhill with such a steam of confidence. And I never would have guessed that, you know, as recently as 3 weeks ago.
Well, and on the other side, Dana, I mean, North Carolina, you have to go back a little further, but they were bad.
They were bad
mid-season, and we see that happen. Yeah, and we see that happen sometimes with teams. But still, what's your surprise level in how they've looked in this tournament? And like, are we headed? Is this going to be a class? Is this game have a chance to live up to the expectations that are going to be so high by the time we get to it Saturday?
I mean, the expectations are like, I don't even know where to even put what stratosphere to put them in. But I certainly think that, yeah, both teams, look, I mean, I think it's really interesting because both teams have kind of found their footing late in different pressure situations. I mean, you know, Carolina was operating with, you know, people wanted Hubert Davis fired within the 6 months of his first, you know, run at this. Because let's be honest, a lot of people, even within the Carolina family, weren't sure that Hubert should have gotten the job after Roy Williams retired. So there was a lot of heat on Hubert. There was a lot of heat, therefore, on his players. But again, if you look at their roster, you think, all right, well, the talent's there. What's missing? And so I think they just kind of discovered something in themselves, again, weirdly, at that same Duke game. I think that game is really a critical juncture for both teams. And what I think is interesting is they're both kind of playing with this freedom right now that they didn't experience. So I do think that this is going to live up to it. I don't think either team is going to run away with this. I really don't. I think it's going to be a ridiculously crazy game because there's so much tension put on it because of the stakes that are involved in it, you know, just generally speaking, because it's Duke Carolina, and then you throw in the constant, is Krzyzewski's last game, is it or isn't it, and can we stop it? And I just think it's going to be crazy. I think they probably wouldn't be surprised if the first 5 minutes it's a little tight, you know what I mean? Like where the ball just doesn't go in for anybody because they're probably both feeling the pressure. But once they chill out and breathe, I think this will be a great game.
Dana O'Neill from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Dana, the other matchup, Villanova and Kansas in the Final Four. What do you make of the job that Jay Wright has done to be as consistent as this Villanova program has become? And how big of a challenge is it going to be for them without Justin Moore, who, of course, has torn his Achilles?
Yeah, you know, I've covered Jay Wright essentially since he started at Villanova. That was my beat when he got hired. I moved over to the Villanova beat. So, and I remember the lean years when people wanted him fired too because, you know, he was going to the NIT with a bunch of great recruits. But I find their program so fascinating because I don't know that anybody in the country knows who they are and who they aren't as well as Villanova. The identity of that program and how you make it work is—it's just unflinching. He gets the kind of players he knows he can work with. He develops them. They wait their turn sometimes. I mean, you know, guys don't want a red shirt or guys don't want to play off the bench, and they get them to do that. I think they're fascinating just because of their level of consistency. And a lot of people want to argue it's because the Big East isn't as tough as the Power Five conferences. That's just dead wrong. I mean, they've won two national championships. They're in the Final Four again. I mean, it's just a model of consistency. Now, all that said, you're right. Without Justin Moore, it's a massive challenge. It's not just because he's a second leading scorer, but the way they run their offense. People talk about Colin Gillespie because he's the leader of the team, but the central figure of the offense, the way they run it, is Justin Moore. Justin Moore is also the guy they put on whoever they need to have shut down on the, you know, defensively, that he's their defensive stopper. It is a monumentally tall order. Jay is really short in the rotation this year. He just never found the, I guess, the comfort, if you will, with some of his freshmen. So now somebody's got to come in and at least by committee fill those minutes. And against a Kansas team that has so much depth and so much talent, it's a lot. It's a whole lot.
Yeah, it's been, I keep thinking like, well, they're not great, you know, but they're just so solid and sound. I mean, what is he, 20-3 since 2016 in this tournament? It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And you're right. I mean, that's the thing. Like, that you look at this Villanova team. I mean, in 2018, they were easily the best team in the country. Like, that was not a shocker. 2016, they kind of, you know, they were a really good team. great shooters, experienced, old. And they ended up having a bunch of pros on this team, that team. This team, you know, you look at them, maybe Brandon Slater is a pro, you know, eventually, but there's no obvious player that jumps out. There's a bunch of great college players who just have maximized every inch of talent that they have. It's really impressive this year that they've been able to do it, to be honest with you.
So, Dana, I do want to take it local for us really quickly. Rick Barnes in Tennessee, plenty of teams, you know, sitting there this weekend and even last weekend who could have made runs. That happens every year, but, you know, it's a continuation of Rick Barnes' struggles in March. Just wondering what you think of that and where that program is, and also what you thought of the job Jerry Stackhouse did this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know everyone likes to get into the Rick Barnes can't win March, because I guess there's evidence to support it. I understand it. It's not like people are making it up. But anybody who pays attention to the NCAA tournament will tell you that so much of what happens in March is it's just a roll of the dice. I mean, what he has done consistently to build Tennessee into a phenomenal program, you know, it will come, I guess, is the best way to phrase it. I think to get angry and want to get rid of Rick Barnes would just be foolish. Again, I'll go back to Jay Wright because, again, I covered them for years. Before they won it all in 2016, they kept losing to really lousy teams in the first weekend. I mean, over and over again, that's what they dealt with until 2016 when they not only broke through to the second weekend, they won it all. So, you know, everybody kind of goes through this. I think Rick has done a terrific job at Tennessee. I think he's getting great players. I think his team plays the way he wants them to play. I think they just got to figure it out. It's almost like they're carrying this thing around with them and they got to get rid of it. You look, I mean, Tony Bennett went through it too. We could name so many coaches. Stack has done a great job. I think a lot of people questioned whether that was a logical hire, whether he could get it done. He made that team competitive in a really hard SEC. So, you know, the SEC is fascinating right now because they just hired about 1,000 new coaches right now. And a lot of them are very interesting and very talented. So, you know, but his ability to make them relevant, to make them a threat, don't take that for granted. I think he's got his finger on what to do to make that team have a spot. You can't win it all overnight. You know, it takes some steps, and now you're taking the proper steps to get better, which is the most important thing you can do.
And O'Neill from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. Dana, appreciate so much you making time for us this morning. Great stuff, and we'll talk to you down the road.
You bet. Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Absolutely. Dana O'Neill does a great job covering college basketball for The Athletic. We'll react to what Dana had to say there. Welcome your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game.
You know, 2 weeks ago when Duke played in the ACC tournament, I think all of us thought they don't look like a team that can win the national championship. Yeah. And then 2 weeks later, they look like the best team. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now, nobody's playing better. Mm-hmm. And their guarding ball screens better. Their communication defensively is better. They have a different look. And it's amazing what 2 weeks can do. Mm-hmm. Because they got back in the lab, got to work in practice, and they've transformed everything to become the team that's playing at the highest level now. And they've always had the most weapons.
That was Jay Billis discussing the Duke Blue Devils, who, as Dane O'Neill pointed out in our last segment, they looked pretty bad a few weeks ago and now are in the Final Four in Coach K's last year and have a chance to win another national title. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you tune in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. What do you make of this transformation for Duke, Joe? We heard Dana O'Neill talk about it in the last segment a little bit, but it is pretty remarkable to think about that North Carolina game, really for both sides back in the regular season, and what has transpired since then. What do you make of this transformation for Duke, you know, going from a team that was struggling a little bit to, as Jay Billis pointed out, maybe the best team in the entire tournament to this point?
Yeah. One thing I make of it is, you know, if you have the most talent, at some point that ends up being a really good thing for you.
Yeah.
And you can see on an individual basis, you know, Banchero, yes, but Roach too is really figured it out. Moore, Griffin. I mean, you know, they've got guys who just when you just need a bucket, they can go get you a bucket. It's good coaching. When we know Coach K can coach. So I don't know that I'd put it in the category of shocking. I guess, you know, the defensive gains they've made, that probably speaks to just, you know, when if you get everybody completely laser focused, you know, it's amazing how much better you can get at certain things that are just kind of detail oriented and ball screen coverages and all these things. I still don't think they're a great defensive team. I mean, for the most part, they've been in some binds. They've been in trouble in a couple of these games, and they just come out and all of a sudden hit six shots in a row or eight shots in a row or whatever, and they're just out-talenting people. And again, good coaching. We know that. You know, they have been good all year. It's not like, I mean, I think everybody thinks about the – a lot of people probably watching for the first time, they got just pounded by North Carolina. That wasn't what they have been for most of the year. And for most of the year, they've been very good. They've had their ups and downs.
No, as we know,
so I don't know that I'd call this.
Coach K called the season to that point very acceptable. So we know they've been pretty good.
That's right. Very acceptable. Yes. So, yeah, it's been a good year. But I think that performance in particular, and then you go really the SEC or the SEC, ACC tournament, they weren't good. They almost lost to Syracuse. I think they were close in another game. Then they got crushed by Virginia Tech. So they just weren't. They looked really bad defensively, especially coming into the tournament. So they figured some stuff out. We see this happen. Always go into your bracket. You know, a good pick is like a really talented team that is coming off a big disappointment. Because everybody wants to go with the hot team, and I got suckered in with Iowa winning the Big Ten, you know, Tennessee winning the SEC. A lot of times it's those teams that are hot that don't do it, and then, like, some team that you're like, ooh, they don't have any momentum at all. All of a sudden it's like they get this refresh and they take advantage of it.
So, obviously, Coach K is going for national title number 6 in this tournament. We'll see if he can get it done starting on Saturday against North Carolina. He's been at Duke for more than 40 seasons. I mean, you're talking about things that are just so difficult to accomplish, and this is a very tough question to ask. I recognize that. But do we think we'll ever see anything quite like Coach K at Duke again? And I'm not talking about the Duke program specifically, but throughout college basketball. Like, are we going to see anything like Coach K again? When it comes to both the combination of the longevity and the success as well. Do we think we'll ever see anything quite like Coach K at Duke again in this sport?
No. I mean, I think, for one thing, just the longevity part of it is, and the 1,200 wins, like, I don't think we're going to see anybody break that record. You know, I don't think we're going to see anyone have a tenure like that. You could look at Hubert Davis and say, hey, he could do 40 years right now. You know, or he could do, you know, at least like 30, you know, if he has a great tenure. If you're at a place like that, you know, those very few places where you just, everything is in place, including the history, the resources to keep winning and getting players. I mean, Jay Wright is working on, he's 20 years at Nova. Could he do another 20 and have a few more championships? Possibly. That would put him at 80 years old. But I mean, he could have like a somewhat comparable run.
He looks, you know, great, guy we're having 60, on by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Guy we're having on tomorrow, Tom Izzo, has been at Michigan State for 25 years. I mean, he's arguably the best Big Ten coach ever.
Yep.
Does he have 10, 15 more years? He's got one title. You know, he's got a lot of Final Fours. I mean, I feel like as we move forward, you know, the money is just keeps getting bigger. And I think that just the pressure, what you know, the pressure, the social media, the scrutiny, the transfer portal, all these things, I think they're all going to serve to lead to shorter coaching tenures on average than, you know, we've seen here. I mean, look, Krzyzewski famously was terrible early at Duke and was almost fired. Yep. And in today's game, 100% gets fired, you know? So that alone, just the amount of time he got in college, like in college football, you know, sometimes coaches get those 5 years, you know, because, you know, it takes that amount of time. But I mean, you know, for him, I mean, he finally got to the NCAA tournament in year four, I guess. But I mean, he had a losing record through 3 years. And a lot of times that's not going to cut it anywhere. And even Duke was not what Duke is now, but Duke still had a great history when he took it over.
Well, I just, it takes to me, I mean, such a special and rare combination of events to happen. Like, number one, I think in order to have, you know, longevity, number one, obviously you got to win, but number two, I think you got to be in a program where you have an opportunity to win national titles every year. Like, you know, if you're a really good coach, and let's say you're, I'm just throwing this name out there, but let's just say you're like, you're someone in the ilk of Eric Musselman, right? You're at Arkansas, really good job. But if you start winning really, really, you know, at a high level at Arkansas consistently, what if Duke comes calling? Or what if North Carolina comes calling? Or one of those quote unquote blue blood jobs comes calling? Like, to me, like, you almost have to be at one of those places outside of a really special circumstance and a really special set of events. Like, you almost have to be at one of those places for something like this to even come close to remotely happening in college basketball.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, it's interesting though that you bring up Arkansas. By the way, Musselman's got three McDonald's All-Americans, just got another huge commitment yesterday. So he's got, like, I guess the top class in the SEC coming in next year. There's
took a
place
nice photo
where
at McDonald's yesterday eating three cheeseburgers. It was good stuff.
I know. I was like, is that a reference to the recruiting or is he trolling Tennessee football? I couldn't tell which one. It could have been both.
A little bit of both.
But I think a place like that, I mean, look, you know, look at some of these. I mean, Tennessee, Rick Barnes, if he were younger, you know, if Rick Barnes, if basically you swap in Texas for Tennessee, Texas basketball is nothing. And, you know, Rick Barnes was there for almost 20 years and turned it into a legit like program. Yes, they should have done more than one Final Four in that time, but like totally changed their identity. He did the same at Clemson. If he had more time at Tennessee because of the resources there and everything, and just the big fan base, you could have something like that there. I mean, you could have something like that at Arkansas. I'll go back to Izzo. They had a great tradition. They had Judd Heathcote, Magic Johnson. They had a national championship, but he totally changed, you know, what the expectation there to regularly go to the Final Four and win the Big Ten all the time. That wasn't what it was before. And you have a huge alumni base and it's a football place that has, you know, you have like that money. So I think that you can change places if you have a great coach and turn them into quote unquote basketball schools, even if they aren't, you know, like Tennessee will always be a football school, yep, right? Before anything else.
Or maybe a baseball school. But yeah.
Well, I guess that's true. Yeah. Well, see, to me, when you say what something is a fill in the blank school, I'm only talking about what's the biggest amount of passion for fandom, sure, you know? But if Tennessee had this kind of, I mean, they can fill TBA all the time if they have teams like this regularly, right? And they pay him like he's a top five coach in pay. So, I mean, I think you can do it at other places. But, yeah, the Krzyzewski thing is just, I mean, 1,200 wins is ridiculous. Think about what that is.
I got a texture that says, what about John Shire, who is, of course, the head coach in waiting up there in Duke, 34 years old. He could do it.
Good luck to him. It is never, you don't want to follow. You don't want to follow Pat Summitt. You don't want to follow Mike Krzyzewski, but someone's got to do it.
Yeah. Someone's got to do it. That's going to be his task starting next year. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Big game coming up tonight between the Preds and the Ottawa Senators. We'll look ahead at that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Tuesday morning. We've got a special edition of the Rex Rant again today. We're going to have a Rex Rant every day this week, so make sure you're tuned in for that at 7:45 each day this week. Preds and Senators tonight. We'll get to that game coming up here in just a minute. Joe, I do want to get your thoughts on this that has just come out from Ian Rappaport. It was the first place I saw it, but obviously the NFC Coaches Breakfast taking place down there in Palm Beach right now. Kyle Shanahan, coach of the 49ers, says apparently he sees a scenario where Jimmy Garoppolo is on the roster in 2022 and acknowledges that the surgery has delayed trade talks. As for if both Trey Lance and Jimmy G are on the roster, Shanahan declines to name a starter. This is coming from Ian Rappaport out there on Twitter. So what do you think of that? Jimmy G, maybe he's hanging around in San Francisco after all.
Yeah, they're trying. They're trying to do all they can and to make it so someone might possibly trade them something for him. He might be our starter. We're happy. We're good. We're happy to good depth of the position. Great. Sounds good. We're fine. We're good. Yeah. Everyone's buying that. But the question has to be asked, and the answer is exactly what I would have expected it to be.
We'll see what happens on that front. Preds and Senators tonight at Bridgestone Arena. Puck drop at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Big opportunity for the Predators tonight. You know, obviously, this is going to be an interesting game for Ottawa. Yeah, Eugene Melnyk passing away, their owner, last night. So, going to be kind of an emotional game for the Senators out there tonight. A game, though, where if you're the Predators, the business at hand, you had St. Louis win again last night. So, they're back ahead of you in the standings. You're now back in the first wild card spot. Dallas plays at Anaheim tonight. Vegas is 4 points behind you right now. And you've got opportunities with two games in hand on them to extend your lead. This is a game where you need to come out of there with 2 points tonight if you're the Predators.
Yeah, pretty simple. And a fair amount of pressure comes with that because you know how you look at those teams. It's just human nature. You go back to the Seattle game or some of these other games where either the loss of the Flyers almost lost to the Flyers twice. You know, you have an expectation. You can say whatever you want before a game, but everybody knows who are the good teams and who are the bad teams now in the league. And so when you come up in a game like this, that's what you think probably, right? Is got to get these 2 points. And as a coach, it's like, no, focus on this is how we play that gives us success, you know? But meanwhile, the other side is a team that's, you're right. It's an interesting dynamic with Melnyk also, but just a team that's, the only joy you can get down the stretch for these teams is to ruin someone else's night. So that's what they'll try to do.
You think Saros is in there tonight? We talked about it yesterday. He's struggled 6 of his past 7 starts. He's given up 3 goals or more. He's got an .889 save percentage over that span. You know, we heard from some fans yesterday that think maybe he needs some rest here this week. Do you think that Saros is back in there tonight?
I'd put him in there. You have a couple days off before the next one. And to me, Ottawa is also a chance to increase the confidence of your goalie. Have a nice clean night between the pipes against the Ottawa Senators. Might be good for him. But I can see the case that you could make for just giving him an extended rest here and letting him kind of get a reset. Whenever he does that, he plays well the next time out.
He does. The numbers certainly back that up. Having said that, I think we'll probably see Saros in net tonight, if I had to take a guess. What's also going to be interesting to see is what do the D pairing / combinations look like, not only tonight, but what do you settle into coming down the stretch if you're John Hines? Obviously, health is going to have a lot to do with that. So is Mark Borowiecki going to be healthy? Is Dante Fabro going to get back in there relatively soon? Like, all of those things are important parts of this because I think we know that if Fabro is healthy,
the top four is going to look like some combination of Yossi Fabreau and Ekholm and Carrier, and then you figure out the third pairing from there. So I think you feel good about that if Fabreau's back in there. Do we trust this decor coming down the stretch? You know, Ekholm, he's under fire for some Predators fans right now. Like, I think he's played well for the most part defensively this year. The offensive numbers have not really been there. I think he's got 20 points on the season. So you want to see more offensively from Ekholm, but defensively, I still think he's pretty darn good. Like, do you trust this decor coming down the stretch? Obviously, we know Yossi and what he brings to the table, but from what you've seen from everybody else this year, what are your thoughts on the Preds' defensive core as they come down the stretch here?
Well, I understand the desire for more offense from Ekholm. I mean, he signed a healthy contract, and his offense had kind of been, you know, progressing, but that's not his primary purpose on this team. And, you know, I still think that he's very sound in the defensive zone, very important part of the team. Fabreau's important to me. I think it's, for the most part, been a really nice bounce back season for him. I mean, they need to get everyone back. And I just don't know yet with Lozon. Like, I don't have a great feel right now. I think he's obviously going to get a lot of opportunities somewhere in there. I mean, I think Carrier has backed up what he did last year. Carrier's just a really good player. He's another great, you know, developmental story on this team. And then, as you've said many times, you know, if you have Benny and Borowiecki together, is that not your best chance? That's now the interesting thing with Lozon is, you know, where would he fit in if everyone were available?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be what's really interesting to figure out. Like, you know, obviously Matt Benning is going to have to play better than he did the other night. He was not good the other night. So is that just a case of getting back in the lineup and maybe being rusty a little bit? I hope, because I didn't think Matt Benning was very good the other night. But I look at this team down the stretch, like a lot of how I feel about the defense core is basically the same conversation we were having coming into the year. Like, when Dante Fabreau is healthy, what version of Dante Fabreau are you getting? Like, it is kind of incredible to think about. He was a healthy scratch in the playoffs last year. I mean,
yeah,
obviously, if he's healthy, he's not going to be a healthy scratch in the playoffs this year. I thought to begin the season, he was really good. I thought he went through kind of a rough patch after that, after the All-Star break. And then he was starting to kind of round back into that form before this injury's taken him out. Like, if he's coming down the stretch, can he get back to playing really, really well? I know he's playing with Yossi for the most part, and there's this idea out there, well, if you're playing with Yossi, you don't really have to do anything, which is not true. But if Fabreau looks a little bit more like the Fabreau I think we've seen more often this year, and that is stronger on the puck, good puck vision, not getting pushed off the wall as much. Like, I think he's made some serious progress in those areas. And if he continues to play like that and progresses, then I feel pretty good about this decor coming down the stretch. If he doesn't and he's struggling, then I think that makes a pretty big difference in what this group can be.
So is it possible that Lozon, you know, solidifies himself as a top four guy?
It's possible. He's going to need to play better than he's played so far for me to trust him with that role. But, I mean, it's possible for sure. I mean, we've talked about it. The thing that I think makes him valuable is he can play either side. He can play left or right, and that's not an easy thing to do. He's physical. I mean, there's a lot of things that I think that he does that they like. Needs to be a little bit better in D-zone coverage. That's got to get better as they move forward here. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators. Nate texts again, says, if you sat Saros tonight, does that make him think in the back of his mind if he plays poorly in the future, he could get a reset by sitting? That doesn't sound good nor make sense to me, since he should get out of the funk by playing. I don't think it's as complicated as that. I think sometimes you just need a rest, and I'm not saying that he needs one or is going to get one. I would just be interested to see whether or not John Hines goes that route tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be the most work of his career by far this year. I mean, it's a workload like he's never seen. So you got to keep that in mind.
We'll continue to take your thoughts. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it is time for the Tuesday edition of the Rex Rant. We'll do that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take it to Bermuda.
And it is time for a Tuesday edition of the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Rhodes. I usually say rant of the week, but we're doing it every day this week, so it's going to be awesome. Rex Rhodes extra angry this week. What's going on?
Just remember, if Robbie or Michelle would like to rant, you guys can always rant too.
Oh, we
this
will.
Is a rant. This is a rant friendly zone. We can all rant.
Mine would be the redhead rant.
Jump in and rant. But today my rant. Ooh, the red like rant. That. The Red Rant, the Rob Rant, and the Rex Rant.
I like it.
Let's do it. All right, today I'm going to go back to Deshaun Watson. I'm going to go back to a-holes on Twitter, too, because, you know, that's a popular theme in my life. So Jim Tomey, his wife, Andrea Tomey, announced a couple days ago that they are canceling their season tickets because of Deshaun Watson. Anybody who knows Cleveland sports or just knows baseball knows Jim Tomey was obviously a great player, long ball hitter for the formerly Indians. And quote, very sad after 40 years as a fan, but this is my line in the sand. I believe women, especially when there are 22 of them, that press conference did nothing to change my mind, end quote. So as you might expect, Andrea Tomey got so much crap from a bunch of morons who like put bones on their heads on Sundays. And you know, are just going to blindly support, you know, their great quarterback that their team has acquired. So she got a message from someone, and I will quote this now. Quote, I am one of the women assaulted by Deshaun Watson. The name is blacked out. I saw your tweet and that you took a stand by giving up your season tickets. Anyone who says that you are virtue signaling or that it doesn't matter is wrong. It matters to me. Any tweet or comment I see that speaks against sexual violence against women is one more reason for me to keep going and not feel utterly hopeless. I've been at my lowest point the last couple of weeks, and I just wanted to say thank you, end quote. I just retweeted Andrea Tomey's response, which is, quote, I wouldn't wish the last 48 hours on anyone, but this letter is why it was worth it. I stand by my decision, and none of the threats, name calling, false accusations, or character assassination makes any difference. Other people's opinion of me is none of my business. And then a little peace sign, end quote. So the point I want to make here is no one ever actually thinks of the women in these situations. It's, oh, he's this, and then Deshaun Watson, what did he say? What did he do? You know, we always forget. Not just the women involved in this situation, but women involved in sexual violence at large and how they perceive these situations. And you can go look up the stats if you want on how many unreported sexual assaults there are because of how many reported sexual assaults that don't end up in criminal charges, let alone conviction. Again, Deshaun Watson is a predatory creep, and that is how I will always regard him moving forward. And I want to applaud Andrea Tomey for being courageous here and taking a stand. And I wish more people would view it through that lens.
Nicely done. It's a good rant today. I had not seen the Andrea Tomey stuff. So I'm glad that you've pointed that out to me.
Yeah. I mean, And I haven't even really delved into, honestly, I'm taking her word for the response. I can't even bear to look at her mentions. I'm sure they're just,
it's just a great.
Complete, just, you know, and it's, I mean, this is what it is. You know, a lot of, obviously people on social media can anonymously scream about all sorts of things. I mean, if we don't want to go on this path, my friend, Robert Klemko, who I covered in Olympics with, and he now works for the Washington Post. He's moved from sports to news, And so like our friend Isabel, who is over there, he is also covering the war. So, and you know, he's got super thick skin and he has to, believe me, for the crap that he has done. He's done a lot of stories that have really triggered people, but here's some of the responses he got on TikTok when he announced that he was in Ukraine for day one of reporting. Let's see. Have a nice funeral. I hope you get hit with artillery shells. You're going to get the Renaud treatment. The world will be a better place because of it. Honestly, glad he didn't pack anything that's actually going to stop a 762 or 545. Washington Post reporters deserve what happens to them. So, look, it's the reality of the world we live in. Everybody has access to everybody and can say crap like this. But I guess at some point I should stop ranting about it because it's not going to change. But, God, it's disgusting.
Well, the best part is, like, it's always somebody ranting on Twitter that's like, you know, a picture of a llama or something, and it's like not a real person's name. So there's no accountability to it whatsoever, which is always my favorite part. Like, you have zero toughness doing this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Total cowards. By the way, on the Twitter front. So, I don't know if you guys know people or if you've had any, experience with being hacked on Twitter, but I got a message from Twitter that an account with the same name was started in Moscow.
Oh, wow.
The other day. So, yeah. So
that's kind of scary.
A Russian bot is trying to overtake my identity on Twitter, which, you know, hey, I mean, there's a lot of bad jokes, a lot of, you know, pictures of food that I've made and stuff like that. So if that has any role in Russia's pending takeover of the world, you know, I hope that's not the case. But yeah, I had to change my password and everything. And that was a little
gracious,
but I know some people who have been hacked recently. I know they're not messing around, man.
I wonder what they would choose as your profile picture.
Well, there's a lot of really good choices on the internet, or they could go in a totally different direction, but a lot of good pictures of me on the internet.
I got a texter on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. It says, good job, Rex Road. We need more voices like you. Another texter that says, couldn't agree more, Joe. Thanks again for the rant. Nate texting in says, great rant, Joe. I thought you were going to rant about Jared saying the Bills would move if a new stadium wasn't built. I don't think the Bills mafia would let that happen. Did Jared say that the Bills would move if they didn't build a new stadium?
He also said the Titans would too.
Well, like eventually, probably. Like, that stadium in Buffalo is a piece of crap, so probably need to build a new one.
Well, thanks for the kind words. You know, I always feel like, you know, that there are people who, you know, who get huffy the other way. This, and again, the whole, well, he's innocent until proven guilty. And again, that's fine. I mean, I'm not talking about criminal stuff here. I'm talking about gross stuff, which there's no debate. It's gross. And again, think about, I mean, just go read the coverage of this. There's extensive reporting done. Jenny Vrentas from Sports Illustrated, I think, has done the most extensive stuff talking with a lot of these women. I mean, you know, read that stuff and their accounts of this and separate it from charges or not, conviction or not. He's a creeper. It's disgusting.
Just separate
and
it. That
I appreciate people supporting that.
Like, just what's pretend that? He's not an NFL player for a second. He's just a guy. Well, right? Just take that out of the picture, people. But, Joe, I loved this rant today. I think it was awesome.
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah. Thank you. Also, with Jared, I think Jared did try to tweet at me yesterday, and then someone responded to it. But since I have him muted, I have no idea what he said. there are great things about Twitter, too.
There are. Got a texter that says that Joe's Russian picture should be Bill Belichick. Just the Russian takeover, and it's just Bill Belichick is Joe Rexroad.
Well, I've been told I look like Charlie Weiss, so let's hope it's not that.
Who told you that? Good gracious.
That's an old bitter Michigan State beat fight. So,
oh boy,
we don't have time to get into that. It's a tough stuff. One, man. That was a hit to the ego.
We'll have another edition of the Rex Rant coming up tomorrow at 7:45. I got some tickets to give away to see the Predators take on the Ottawa Senators tonight at Bridgestone Arena in the Game Changer section. Be caller number 3, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Senators coming up tonight at Bridgestone Arena, 615-737-1025. We'll continue to get to more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Get back into the Titans Stadium discussion as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.